The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Jackie McMullen, Monica McNutt, Tim Kalishaw, Mina Kimes. Our final four on how Gonzaga, Stanford, South Carolina, and UCLA got through. Monica, you called the UCLA game a rock fight, which I love, because it was two rocks fighting each other with rocks. Let's go!
What kind of rock?
A 1, a 1, a 2, and an 11 in the final four. How UCLA got here is a story. And it's not just the story of their history as a program or the story of their run at the end of the season in the Pac-12 or from first four play-in to final four, but the story of last night to beat Michigan, the rock fight, as McNutt said, and Michigan shooting bricks from a brick house into a brick factory where the factory is tasked to make bricks. That's how they were shooting yesterday. Tim Kalishaw, around the horn to you. Is this about UCLA being great or Michigan just being ice cold?
Tony, I've played this game a couple times, and I know when the final score is 51-49, you're supposed to say the ice cold team lost it, blew it, yeah. And that final shot by Wagner that unfortunately he'll be remembered for despite all the things he did, leading up to that. But I'm going to give credit to UCLA. When they beat Abilene Christian to get to the Sweet 16, people said, well, they still haven't played anybody. Now they beat a 2 seed. They beat a 1 seed. They won last night when their best player went to the bench with an injury for a few minutes. And one other thing, I sometimes go nuts about coaches who are just all over the place on the sidelines. And Mick Cronin is all over the place. But I really think he coached a hell of a game. They took 30 seconds to shoot. They limited the possessions. They did what they had to do, and they deserved to win the game.
Monica was last night about what UCLA did or what Michigan couldn't do.
It's about what UCLA did, because even if Michigan got hot, think back to the Michigan State game, the very first game UCLA had to win. The Spartans shot 47% from the field, and UCLA still won. So they've got a formula. You can hit shots. That's fine. We're going to turn you over, capitalize on those turnovers, and hang tough on the glass, even though they've mostly been out-rebounded in this tournament, too. They've got grit, and you can't really put that in the stats.
One more question for you, Monica. Tim brought up Wagner's last shot. It's the last two shots, really, right? For Michigan to go through Wagner there as he was cold in the game, you all right with that?
Yeah, I am. I mean, he's a guy that's led this team in terms of scoring and is capable of hitting that shot. That's the moment. You know, you can bet Juwan Howard looked him in the eyes and said, you're going to hit this shot. Didn't plan out that way, but you can't not have faith in your guy.
We'll bring in Jackie McMullen now on what UCLA did or Michigan failed to do.
Well, it's what UCLA did so Michigan could fail to do it. That they're one in the same.
Okay, all right, I'll allow it.
How nice of you. Thank you. We're so grateful that you'll allow it. Goodness gracious. Here's the thing. Michigan, they were the most beautiful offensive team one game earlier. What happened? 12 total assists, 20. That's a defensive team that's in your gut. 14 turnovers. A team that took care of the ball all of a sudden doesn't take care of the ball. So much of what went wrong for Michigan is because UCLA made it happen that way. So kudos to them going
forward. And Mina Kimes.
I mean, you can't ignore how bad the shooting was at the end from Michigan. And you saw the montage of jumpers, but they were like missing layups too. But you also can't ignore the fact that, as Monica said, the word grit really describes UCLA's run in this tournament, the tenacity they've shown, barely making it in. They lost one of their best players, Chris Smith, before the tournament. Mick Cronin, Steve said, has been incredible. Shout out to his dad, Hep, which is a great name that's kind of fallen out of favor, I feel like. But it feels crazy to call UCLA, of all schools, a Cinderella team. But they are the Cinderella team, the Cinderella story in this tournament, and they deserve their spot in the final.
An 11 seed in the Final Four. That's the definition of Cinderella in a lot of ways. But, yeah. Tim, are you going to allow, as I said before, UCLA, the bluest of blue bloods, to be a Cinderella here?
Well, yes, because this team is. I mean, they lost their last four games before they got into the tournament. This team barely made the NCAA, obviously. They were on the play-in game. One thing about Michigan, though, if I'm a Michigan fan, it's maybe not the missed shots. It's did they take the right shots? Did they get the ball inside enough down the stretch where they had been dominant earlier and they did not?
Like a last word.
It's 2021, you guys, so no, Cinderella doesn't have to fit the traditional construct of Cinderella, especially in a year where two other blue bloods in Kentucky and Duke aren't even in the field. So, yes, UCLA is our
darling. And a first four participant, right? This is the run we saw VCU make. Once every 10 years, somebody plays an extra game and makes it all the way to the Final Four. All right, let's talk Gonzaga now, because I say again, the most underappreciated, undefeated team going into a Final Four as the overall one seed ever? The season scoring margin is 23-1. 23.1 points per game is how they beat other teams. That's like UConn territory. It's the best in this tournament, in the men's side, in the last 20 years for a team. So, Monica, are you now willing to say Gonzaga is title prohibitive favorite? And is this a historic run?
Reality, I'm not ready to say it until it's in the books. This is definitely a historic run, but we saw this in 2015. Speaking of, a current blue blood that's just not in this dance in terms of Kentucky. If they win, then cool. My hat is off to them. But I still think that this Baylor's Bears defense with that three-headed guard monster that they have is going to cause some problems for the Gonzaga.
When you see Gonzaga in general, though, a team that put up, it was the record, most double-digit wins in a row at one point in this regular season, Monica, what do they do especially well?
I think they pass the ball extremely well. They've got tremendous guard play, and they've got balance inside. And Kispert is just a knockdown shooter in terms of wherever he catches the basketball. I also think you can't not talk about Ayayi in terms of running alongside of Jalen Suggs. But this team also defends really well as a unit.
Yeah.
That's what I found impressive.
I think you basically just said every part, every facet of the game, they do very, very well, but not the favorite for you. Jackie Mack, how about you?
Well, as the only other panelist besides Monica and Mutt that had three of the four Final Four choices, I'm channeling my inner Tim there in case you're wondering what I'm doing. I do think, I've thought from the beginning Gonzaga was going to win, and I still feel Gonzaga's going to win. And it'll come down to you and me, Monica. If you're right, if I'm right, well, to be continued. Here's the thing about Gonzaga. I thought it was so interesting that Jalen Suggs was saying he hadn't even played well yet. He was pressing, and he got a great pep talk from Paige Beckers, which I loved hearing that, the collaboration there. That is so fantastic. But if he hasn't even played his best, and Corey Crisper was talking about his off-shooting night, and we haven't even gotten to Drew Timmy yet, who should already be signed up for the next Will Ferrell buddy movie, because he's going to be his co-star for the next 10 years, then what is to say about this team? They haven't even come close to reaching their peak yet.
Haven't reached their peak yet. They're undefeated, going into the Final Four and beating teams by an average of 23 points a game. Is this a historic run, Tim Kalischer, we're witnessing right now?
Well, it's a historic run to the championship game. I'm with Monica. They haven't got past Baylor. Now, I'm going to give them next Saturday's victory. I'll go ahead and crown them on that. They play faster than everybody else. That game last night, you're thinking, is USC going to do to them what they did to other teams? It's 7-0 after 2 minutes. The game is over. They have no shot. They got a guy named Timmy, who is from my hometown. He went to the wrong high school. He went to Richardson Pierce instead of RHS. But, I mean, they got all the weapons you could possibly want, and they just, look, they were going to win a title at some point. This looks like it's probably...
Why do you say that? Like, they were going to win a title at some point. And, I mean, please, can't we celebrate what this is? Again, 23 points per game. That's what they're beating other teams by, Mina Kimes. What are you seeing from Gonzaga?
Yeah, dominance. And if they do win, of course, the if does apply, as everyone said, this will go down as one of the all-time great performances. I mean, what they've done through the first few games of the tournament was rivaled only by UConn in 2004 in terms of absolutely crushing teams by more than 15 points. They are amazing, but it goes beyond the stats. When you watch them, They are such a complete basketball team. There's a reason why my panelists have been naming every player on this team, because they're all good and they all contribute something different, and they allow Gonzaga to beat teams in different ways. USC is a great example, a team that was so dominant on defense and in the paint. That's why Drew Timmy was so huge last night. USC had zero blocks, and Gonzaga had the most points in the paint versus the Trojans of any team that's played them this season. They are the favorite. They've been the favorite. They're going to win the whole thing. Mm-hmm.
Crossed your arms there at the end. That is an exclamation point for me to Khan.
Emphasis.
All right, time for one more story here. This is actually two stories in the news simultaneously. Russell Westbrook responding to Stephen A. and Kevin Durant's DMs with actor Michael Rapaport. Athletes and criticism from the media, criticism on social media. That's what this story is. So Westbrook is primarily about basketball and self-worth. So we'll focus on Durant here because it's possibly more complicated. A private than public feud. The details here verging on vulgar with slurs and homophobia, threats of a fight. It was Rapaport who has leaked or posted or published these direct messages. Jackie, how do you consider it with Durant? How do you think the Nets or NBA might be looking at this?
Well, the NBA has to look at it, and they come down hard on any kind of homophobic talk at all. We know that from the past with the late Kobe Bryant and others. So I do expect them to do something about this. This is not the Kevin Durant I know. I've never heard him speak this way, but clearly when he gets into the social media sphere, something happens. I'm sure his friend Rich Kleiman, who's also his agent and his business partner and one of his closest confidants, is going to tell him, please shut this down. I don't care that it's DM. I don't care it's supposed to be private. I've learned this, and I'm not even on social media. Whatever you say and do, you better know it could be public. And Kevin knows that. It's just, this is a real blind spot for him. Real blind spot.
Mina Kimes?
So Durant is very active on Twitter, and normally I actually really enjoy it. He's really transparent, admits to how he feels about things. Sometimes he's criticized for it, but I think it's unfair to place expectations on athletes to not be themselves on the internet just because they're famous. It is fair to expect them, to expect Kevin Durant in this case, to not use homophobic language, not use a sort of language that perpetuates bigotry, because many people look up to him. He is a role model. And this sort of casual language has consequences. I would like to hear him apologize for it, frankly, because it would be meaningful to a lot of people. And I think he knows that, and I hope he acts on it, because it is very disappointing to see this.
Monica McNutt, Kevin Durant has a history on social media. I mean, we've done stories about the burner accounts. This is maybe something different in your eyes, but how do you view it?
I don't take issue with the burner account. I echo what Mina said. Never has his commentary on social media or his back and forth with trolls, if you will, affected his play. And so, therefore, if that's how you express yourself, so on, so be it. This, to me, crosses the line, not only just because of the language that he uses, but it's a complete lapse in judgment. Sure, DMs. However, screenshots happen every day on the regular, and you, of all people, know that you have this incredible platform and so many eyes looking at you. Now, at what point, if Rapaport should have said, I'm uncomfortable now, as opposed to just publishing these, I can't get into all that. But he has to have the wherewithal to know that this could be presented to the entire world as it has been. And yes, I do think something is now on the NBA and the Nets to come down.
And Tim Kalishaw.
You know, in the last year, we've talked a lot about systemic racism for a lot of obvious and good necessary reasons. There is an ingrained homophobia in this country. And if you think about words that have been used for our whole lifetimes, even if you think they don't mean something, they do. And hopefully from this, Kevin will, just like others who have gotten caught up in this thing. We saw it happen with just a little word Justin Thomas threw out on a golf course. When you get called on it, maybe you at least think about it. And it does more than just embarrass you. It makes you kind of address who you are.
That's our time on this. Thanks for your thoughts on that. Going to take a break right here. Buy or sell on the other side. We'll get to March Madness. A team holding another team to 0 points in the fourth quarter of an Elite Eight game. Next.
Oh, sure. Let's do that game.
Zero.
And you're
going
to score zero.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Welcome back to Around the Horn, coming to you from the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17.
0 points allowed in the fourth quarter. 0 points allowed in the fourth quarter of the game that gets you into the Final Four. South Carolina defensively perfect on Texas. Meanwhile, Stanford came back from 12 down at half. It was nearly a perfect second half. Dominated Louisville in the end. So they advanced. 2-1 seeds advancing, Monica. What's the more impressive win last night?
I got to give a slight edge to Stanford, Rialli. Although South Carolina's defense is super impressive, Texas had given all they had to pull off the upset against Maryland. But when you look at what Stanford did, that 12-point deficit is the largest they faced all season. And they had been dismal from the three-point line through the first half, which was the formula for their two losses during the regular season. It was the depth of this Stanford squad that stood out. Ashton Preshtal hit three threes. She only took three threes. She averages like 6 points a game. She had 16 last night at Stanford.
Jackie McMullen.
So obviously, it's the idea of leaving a team scores. That to me is unprecedented and the answer, the absolute answer. But I was very taken with the Stanford game too. And you know why? I'll tell you, Monica, because Kiana Williams, who's their senior, and they rely on her so much, she had missed 11 straight shots, Tony. So what happens when the game's on the line? She hits every big shot that they need to hit when they're down in a game against a really, really good Louisville team. So for me, it's kind of Stanford too, because those were two incredible teams that played.
Mina Kimes?
I mean, I was blown away by South Carolina's defense. Tony, they blocked a shot one out of every five Texas possessions in this game. And it wasn't just this game where their defense has been stifling. So far this tournament, opponents are averaging just 74 points per 100 possessions. They are unreal on defense. It's spectacular, and honestly, they deserve all the kudos.
And Tim Kalishaw.
I gave you South Carolina a week ago when they shut down the best three-point shooting team, Oregon State. And now they beat a Texas team that had just beaten UCLA, beat Maryland. And zero, you'll see zero occasionally in a high school quarter when there's no shot fired.
It is unbelievable.
Zero in a college quarter, that's rough.
In the college quarter of a game that it's Elite Eight. I mean, you're playing, it's unbelievable. And also unbelievable,
kind of a big one.
Dawn Staley is unbelievable to me. Her eyewear is awesome. But she doesn't even fog up when she wears the mask. How does she do that?
I don't know.
There's other
things to like about Dawn Staley a little more.
Of course, but I'm just saying, it's something that jumped out at me last night. It's amazing. It's a 1-1-1-3. Stanford, the overall number one, are they the favorite? Or is it South Carolina after that fourth quarter? Or is it UConn? And Arizona's playing with house money, Jackie. The favorite.
They are. You know, the great answer is that who can really say, and that's a real compliment to women's basketball, when it was so long, the default answer was always UConn. I think you can make a great case for South Carolina, but as the overall number one seed, Stanford is so deep, and they come at it with so many players, I still think they're the favorite.
UConn?
I picked UConn. I'm going to ride with UConn, but I want to be clear, it's not just because of Gino Auriemma's playoff experience or Paige Bueckers, who's obviously been incredible. I think she's 14 points away from breaking Breanna Stewart's freshman record for the tournament. Amazing. The team defense is what makes UConn stand out. It's why they're going to win.
Tim Kalishaw.
Even though we know UConn didn't really win that game two nights ago, that actually is that call is what's going to fuel UConn. Now it's us against the world. Nobody believes we even beat Baylor. So now UConn slides back into that.
Are you saying if Dede Richards doesn't foul out, Baylor wins that game? Or I'm sorry, does he get hurt, Baylor wins that game, Tim Kalishaw?
Yeah. Saying that she got fouled on the shot.
McNutt, too. That, too, yes.
Yeah, there's two things that happened in that game that stand out. I gotta go with Jackie, though, on this one. Stanford, to me, is a favorite, but it's not by a wide margin. And that part of this conversation, that you've got four teams that really could mix it up and you could come away with any one of them as a champ, speaks to where the women's game is going. But Stanford, the Cardinals are just too deep.
Jackie, you got the points for your bracket pick in the men's side, which you were happy to endorse. You didn't really tell us where you were in the women's side. A little bit about me.
I will tell you. Yes? I picked UConn to win, but I think Stanford should be the favorite.
That's a good pick. Mina Kimes, by the way, is right there at the top of our board. Kalashaw, you're lower down in the pack there, and that's what's going to decide this game today. Mina Kimes. Mina, come back to us. Mina, come back to us. Sorry about that. Oh, you're so small now. Kimes and McNutt. My bad. Showdown in 2 minutes. There she is. Come back. Close.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The list of freshmen to win Player of the Year in college basketball. Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, Zion Williamson, Paige Beckers. Monica, what does this mean for Beckers?
Man, she's shaking it up as a freshman to win this award. But we all know that up in Storrs, Connecticut, they are not measured by individual accolades. It's all about trophies. So if she gets to the final this year and Stanford bounces them, this will just be kind of cute.
Mina?
Kind of cute. I mean, we don't have to compare her to the greats who came before. You kind of won so many championships. We can look at this as what it is, an incredible single season. She's done things no players at UConn have ever done. Single game assist record, back to back to back, 30-point games.
That when you're above what Stewart's done and Taurasi's done and Moore's done and all that list, it's amazing. On that list I gave you, Williamson, Davis, Durant all went pro after their freshman year. Beckers cannot. That's the rule. We'll move on. Look out. Showdown 2, Chattanooga Lookout. It's one of the great names and mascots of all time. That mascot costume was reported stolen yesterday. But today, the team got Louis back. Here's my question, Mina. What do you do with a stolen Chattanooga Lookout costume?
You give it back because there's literally nothing you can do with that costume. I've been racking my brain trying to think of purposes for what appears to be a living hat. And I can't think of any.
All right.
Let me help you, Mina. You hold it for ransom until your team faces that team, and then you take the curtain of distraction to the next level by presenting the obliterated and misshapen former mascot's head. Yes.
I'm not sure that qualifies as crime of the century, Monica McNutt. 30 seconds of FaceTime goes to Mina Kimes.
Like curtain of distraction. So today is International Trans Day of Visibility. It's coming at a moment when across the country, the world really, there's movements to restrict trans kids' access to gender-affirming healthcare, to play sports. So I just wanted to say two things. I want to encourage you to listen to my colleague Sarah Spain's podcast, That's What She Said, with Chris Mosier, an activist in the space. And I just wanted to read a tweet from Dwayne Wade responding to one of these bills. Of course, he's been so outspoken about his own daughter, Zaya. Your hate will not be final. Love will always win in the end. Thank you for that, Dwayne.
Thank you for that, Mina Kimes. Trans rights are human rights. The trans community is our community. See you tomorrow.
Pardon the Interruption is presented by Toyota.